Tonight's Molloy program. 30 years ago tonight, I can tell you exactly where I was. Just like I can tell you exactly where I was when I heard about Kennedy's assassination, King's assassination. I don't have a lot to say about this day. And what happened 30 years ago, except it is well known that the right-wingers hated Lenin because he represented something they could never be, something the Becks and the Limbaughs and the rest of these thugs could never be, and that's somebody who was independent of the system, who lived a life that the right-wingers could only mock. And I think Lenin's life pointed out the absolute poverty of the souls or the attitudes of people like Hannity and Beck and the rest of them. It's hard to believe it's been 30 years, but, you know, those historic events that carry an awful lot of emotional weight, you remember everything about the moment, what the room looked like, what the smells were, who came in and told you, and so on and so on. Kay Petrini, our education correspondent, writes, "Hi, Mike. I wish I could come up with something meaningful to say about the 30th anniversary of the murder of John Lennon, but there's just no way to capture what I'm feeling. All I know is that as a 15-year-old kid who loved the Beatles, I was absolutely devastated on that day in 1980. But it is only now, 3 decades later, that I'm coming to understand just how much we lost. In the intervening years, this nation has moved further and further away from the ideals Lenin wrote and sang about. And the events of the past decade make me wonder if we can ever find our way back to even considering the humanity and peace he shared with the world. The dark sky and nonstop rain in San Francisco perfectly reflected what's in my heart on this sad, sad day. Kay." And I'm going to leave it at that. The only thing I'll add, I always had this idea that I would have the opportunity to grow old with John Lennon in the world. David sent me an email today. He said, "Mike, here's a question for the right-wingers. If tax cuts create jobs, then where in the hell are the damn jobs?" In the past year, the Bush tax cuts created no jobs, but we lost jobs. I'm so sick and tired of these damn blanking talking points tax cut that say tax cuts create jobs. Like I said, the Bush tax cuts have been around for 10 years, and we lost, not gained, jobs. David, yeah, the simple truths abide, and horse hockey and lies and untruths float in and float out. On tonight's program, we have a moment with Bob that's a real stunner. his stuff just keeps getting more and more. What's the word I'm looking for? More and more convincing, more and more disturbing. Thank you, Kathy. More and more disturbing. Stick around for that. Also, in the third hour tonight, what we've been talking about in this program for some time now, primary challenge to Obama in 2012, and an email that I got from a guy in Seaside, California named Daniel. He was, he included his last name and his home phone number. And it's a rather lengthy email, but he takes me to task for my comments about Obama. And what Daniel's point, the point he tries to make, is that in doing that, I'm destroying any chance of liberals ever uniting. I want to say that Daniel has a misconception of the power and range of this program, but that's okay. We'll do that tonight, too. Also, the filthy ghoul that is Glenn Beck. I tried to erase him from my radar screen, but a couple of things have come up today that I'm going to have to share with you from Beck World. Obviously, we talked about this last night, didn't we? Cyber war has begun. I love this. I am just, I wish I had the experience or the knowledge, the cyber knowledge, to join the army of cyber warriors, the hackers, who have determined that the truth, by God, will out. And if war is what the lying sons of bitches who run governments, if that's what they want, if they want war, war is what they'll get. And I think today's activities by this small army of activist hackers, I think today's activities was a shot across the bow to capitalist America, to the capitalist world. And I think the shot was very clear. What it said was, you are entirely vulnerable. There's no place you can hide. You cannot defend against us. We will take you down. We will destroy your business if you continue to harass the man who is simply, and I use that word clearly and with much thought, a man who is simply trying to expose the lies and deceptions of governments. The U.S. And all sorts of governments. The lies and deceptions. As Assange said, what they're involved in is scientific journalism. They report, and then they provide the links to the documents that are being reported upon, and you can see where the truth lies. It's very simple. Very simple. No longer is there any need to have Rupert Murdoch's terrorist broadcast organization, in its attempts to destroy America, provide the only gruel that these crazed right-wingers suck up. Every story that appears on Rupert Murdoch's terrorist anti-American broadcast network can now be invalidated by presenting the documents from which the stories are drawn. And this is true with everybody. But it's the terrorist network of Rupert Murdoch that is... I can't wait until the battle with that bunch of apes begins. Talk about a planet of the apes. Every foul, stinking right-winger in America ought to go to work there, because the day is coming. So we're going to talk about that tonight. The hackers have attacked companies that hindered WikiLeaks. And praise be to the goddess, if you will. that was the best news I got all day. Best news I got all day. I certainly salute these hackers who have decided, and they are legion. Anyone who thinks that this is three guys sitting in a basement someplace, you are incredibly wrong. Incredibly wrong. There are thousands of people who are now involved in this, spread globally. And there's not a government on earth that can do anything about it. So, boys and girls who run the world, you capitalist pigs, guess what? Time to get real. We'll be right back. Tony,
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. What happened today, this army of activist hackers in support of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange went after MasterCard.com, which had stopped processing donations for WikiLeaks. They went after Amazon.com, which revoked server space from the group. The online payment service PayPal, which cut off its commercial cooperation. And the lawyer representing the two Swedish women who have accused Assange in the sex case. The hackers also accused Visa of stopping the processing of donations for WikiLeaks, and Visa.com also was affected. By the way, as just a little side note here, you heard today about the California-based company that launched a spacecraft. SpaceX is the name of the company. It was created by Elon Musk, who is a PayPal co-founder. Small circles in capitalism. Very small indeed. This afternoon, what is being described by the New York Times as a counterattack began against the hackers. This is laughable. The counterattack was a company, a British internet monitoring firm, Netcraft, reporting that the website being used by the hackers to distribute denial-of-service software had been suspended by a Dutch hosting firm, LeaseWeb. Ooh, really? Did that happen? The hackers continued to give instructions for the denial-of-service attacks via a Twitter account until it was suspended later in the afternoon. Ooh, Twitter struck! The group, Anonymous, that's how they refer to themselves, the hackers, had vowed to take revenge on any organization that lined up against WikiLeaks. The group claimed responsibility for at least the MasterCard attack, and according to one activist associated with the group, was conducting multiple other attacks. That activist, a guy named Greg Hausch, said in a telephone interview that 1,500 people were online forums and chat rooms, including Anonyps.net, mounting mass and repeated denial-of-service attacks on sites that have moved against Mr. Assange and WikiLeaks in recent days. The hacker army has rallied around the theory that all the actions against the organization, against Mr. Assange, including these sexual accusations, are politically motivated and designed to silence those challenging this kind of global authority. Mr. House said, to all of us, there's no distinction. He is a political prisoner, and the two things are completely entwined. In an online chat room at Anonyps.net, activists who announced their nationalities from around the world, hello from Sierra Leone, hi from Austria, talked openly of the attacks and said they would need 5,000 people to effectively paralyze PayPal. Many also plotted a rumor campaign to further destabilize MasterCard, suggesting that others spread stories that credit card numbers were not safe. What this points out, and thank God for these people, the hackers, the internet renegades, the so-called outlaws. Thank God for them. Well, goddess, or thank the trees, or, you know, whatever, thank the rocks. Because as wired up as every business on earth now is, there is no defense. None. They can put in as many firewalls and security systems as they want. They are dealing with people who understand the web to a finer degree, and finer I mean more minute degree, than any corporate pig who runs the IT department of any of these companies. And I don't think these hackers are going to be bought out. Hey, instead of hacking us over here at MasterCard, come on over here. We'll pay you $500,000 a year to work for us. I don't think that's going to happen. I really don't. A spokesman for MasterCard confirmed that that company's website was brought down as a result of, quote, a concentrated effort to flood our corporate website with traffic and slow access, end quote. Well, the company was making concerted efforts to get its site back up, and security teams were working to prevent further outages. Visa issued a statement late this afternoon saying that its website was, quote, experiencing heavier than normal traffic, end quote, although it did not say why. The company also said, Visa said it was, quote, taking steps to restore the site to full operations within the next few hours, end quote, and that its payment processing network was functioning normally. A PayPal representative confirmed a series of attacks, but said that while the website had been slowed, it remained, quote, fully operational, end quote. Post Finance, the Swiss postal system's financial arm, which closed Mr. Assange's account after saying he provided false information, was also under attack today. Mark Andre, a spokesman for Post Finance, said that the company had been under serious assault, quote, an overload organized by friends of WikiLeaks, we think, end quote, since Monday evening. The attack blocked the website for several hours, and it remains unstable. The company has taken active security measures, but is bracing itself for another battle. You bet your asses. We'll be right back.
Right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, and this hour is sponsored by Dave Raids. R-A-D-E-S. Dave Raids. David Raids of Dave Rodeo 2004 YouTube site sponsors this hour's Mike Malloy show. tprogramming.com coming soon. Very cryptic message here from Dave Raids. Dave Raids of Dave Rodeo 2004 YouTube site. Check it out. Dave Rodeo 2004. I haven't gone there. Sponsors this hour of Mike Malloy's program. Tprogramming.com coming soon. Thank you, Dave. Time for a moment with Bob. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Vis-a-vis the WikiLeaks revelations and the response by all these corrupt governments and corporate entities on the globe, at least that's the way I see this moment with Bob, he writes, "Hey Mike, I'm not paranoid, I've got proof." Isn't that what all paranoids say? Robert D. Hare, H-A-R-E, is a researcher renowned in the field of criminal psychology. He's professor emeritus of the at the University of British Columbia, where his studies centered on psychopathology and psychophysiology. Writing about psychopaths, Hare states that, quote, lacking in conscience and empathy, they take what they want and do as they please, violating social norms and expectations without guilt or remorse. What is missing, in other words, are the very qualities that allow a human being to live in social harmony, end quote. According to Hare, Bob writes, the consensus among researchers in this area is psychopathy or psychopathy stems from a specific neurological disorder, which is biological in origin and present from birth. I no longer use the word corporatocracy since reading Political Polarity, A Science on the Nature of Evil, Adjusted for Political Purposes by Andrew Lobachevsky. The correct term is obviously pathocracy. Pathocracy. Our ruling elite, you see, the leaders and policymakers in our government, the media, the military, and in Wall Street and corporate boardrooms are, as Robert Hare described, quote, intra-species predators. End quote. psychopaths. It's the kind of realization that makes me want to run shouting through the streets like Kevin McCarthy at the end of the 1956 version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Remember that? Look! You're in danger! Can't you see? They're after you. They're after all of us. Our wives, our children, everyone. They're here already. You're next. You're next. You're next. Though the observation is correct, it wouldn't do a whole lot of good to go berserk in public until the cop showed up to beat me into a peaceful, dreamlike state. It's better to take Hal's advice from 2001, A Space Odyssey. I can tell from the tone of your voice, Dave, that you're upset. Why don't you take a stress pill and get some rest? But after a refreshing lie down, after munching on some flavor of benzodiazepine, the uncomfortable fact remains. The people in charge, the people who make the rules and call the shots, the people in control of our planet's destiny, the people with the big guns are seriously insane. And it's not just some sort of whimsical insanity we're talking about here. This isn't about a bunch of bulgy-eyed, sweat-glazed loonies babbling about alien bases on the moon. These people gain satisfaction through antisocial behavior. They have neither empathy nor conscience. They do not experience shame, guilt, or remorse. They can plan the deaths of thousands after breakfast without spoiling their appetite for lunch. They dominate our society and have forced us all to accept their terms. The proof is simple. Any statement, any policy, any action by our institutional leaders devoid of empathy or conscience is evidence of a psychopath at work. Who else but a psychopath would describe blowing innocent women and children into a bloody mist as collateral damage? Who else but a group of psychopaths would dole out $12.3 trillion in our taxpayer money to the richest people in the world, while in this country, a home goes into foreclosure every 7 seconds? Only psychopaths are capable of lying our country into illegal wars so they can reap billions by causing the deaths of millions. Only a psychopath like Kate O'Byrne, the Washington editor of National Review, while speaking to Republican leaders, could accuse struggling parents of criminal negligence because they need a school breakfast program to help feed their children, then turn around and advocate for continuing tax breaks for the richest Americans. Many times we've all thought, after reading or hearing the latest Republican tirade, these people are shameless. We were right. They are incapable of that emotion or other, quote, qualities that allow a human being to live in social harmony, end quote. They are psychopaths. And as soon as we completely understand on a cellular level that we're dealing with, quote, intraspecies predators, end quote, the better chance we have of escaping the slaughterhouse. Mainstream media is no help. Their job is to distract us. Auto de fe, an act of faith, was the ritual execution of heretics by the Inquisition after a confession had been extracted. As the condemned were led to where they would be burned to death, a painting of a pleasant scene would be held in front of them, filling their field of view so they couldn't see the awaiting stake. The primary function of Brian Williams, Wolf Blitzer, Britt Hume, Katie Couric, and the rest of the haircuts on the nightly news, and by the way, they're either psychopaths or don't mind getting paychecks from psychopaths. The primary function is to describe the pleasant painting to us as we make our way to the awaiting pyre. The rest of the time, they join in with the gas bags on Fox to scare the crap out of us, so we're all terrified of what might happen on the day before tomorrow. If we're too stupid and scared to know what's going on right now, while we're living through it, we won't recognize the psychopaths among us, nor understand that capitalism is their method of oppression. Malcolm X was a very scary black man who terrified white America because he told the truth. Here's some of what he said. The press is so powerful in its image-making role, it can make a criminal look like he's the victim and make the victim look like he's the criminal. If you aren't careful, the newspapers will have you hating the people who are being oppressed and loving the people who are doing the oppressing. You show me a capitalist, I'll show you a bloodsucker. How can you thank a man for giving you what's already yours? How, then, can you thank him for giving you only part of what is yours? The media is the most powerful entity on earth. They have the power to make the innocent guilty and to make the guilty innocent, and that's power, because they control the minds of the masses. You get your freedom by letting your enemy know that you'll do anything to get it. Then you'll get it. It's the only way you'll get it. If you're not ready to die for it, take the word freedom out of your vocabulary. End quote, Malcolm X. Oh, hell, Bob writes. The benzodiazepines wearing off. You're in danger. Can't you see? They're after you. They're after all of us. Our wives, our children, everyone. They're here already. You're next. You're next. You're next. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling and by Dave Rades, since he is this hour's sponsor of Dave Rody 2004 YouTube site. Go to Bob's website, superbeans.com, and there is there's a link to his essays or his screaming, however you want to define what Bob writes. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. As a matter of fact, these moments with Bob, let me see, where is this? superbeans.com/rant, R-A-N-T, .htm. superbeans.com/rant.htm. That way you don't have to email me and say, please send me what Bob wrote tonight, what you read tonight. Oh, my God. We'll take a break and come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. I like driving backwards in the fall, because it doesn't remind me of anything.
How much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is indeed. 10 before the hour, and this hour is sponsored by Dave Rades. Dave Rades, R-A-D-E-S. David Rades of Dave Rodeo, or Dave Rody, you know, like a Rody on a rock band. Dave Rody 2004 YouTube site. Dave Rody 2004 YouTube site sponsors this hour of the Malloy Show tonight. Coming soon, Dave promises, tprogramming.com. I wonder what that could be. From Jeff and Cynthia in Indianapolis, I got this. Dear Mike and Kathy, love your show. I tune in to you and a few others in hopes of trying to find a shred of hope for our future. but I'm finding it harder every day to hold out much hope. My girlfriend Cynthia and I were on our way back home from Knoxville, Tennessee, visiting her family, returning home to Indianapolis, which, by the way, is the Republican hellhole of the world. Hungry and nearly out of gas after 7 hours on the road, at 4 a.m. we pulled into a truck stop about halfway between Cincinnati and Indianapolis to eat and fuel up. When we entered the restaurant to be seated, we noticed that all the televisions were on Fox. When the girl asked where we'd like to sit, we informed her, "No, thank you, we will be leaving." When asked why, I informed her, "We will do no business with anyone who forces the Fox propaganda network on us." This lady also happened to be the night manager of the place and immediately became quite rude, telling us, "That's fine. No one's forcing you to stay." At this point, only my girlfriend's presence prevented me from making the situation much worse because I have zero tolerance for these right-wing bastards. Anyway, at the risk of running out of gas, we made it 30 miles up I-74 on fumes to another truck stop where we had a great breakfast, spending about $22 plus a nice tip, another $35 on other items in the gift shop, and $58 to fill the tank. And a customer who always... when in need, will choose to do business with them instead of the other establishment. $125 the other place did not get and will never get. Cynthia and I are doing this anytime we walk into an establishment showing Fox. Our wallet is one of the few weapons we have left to fight this right-wing fascist crap. I know we are just two people who are fed up. But there must be more out there, and we have to stand together against this Nazi menace. Thanks for letting me vent. We are, as every night, sitting here enjoying the program online on 92.1 The Mic out of Madison, Wisconsin, because, of course, we have four right-wing talk stations in Indianapolis, but not one damn minute of progressive talk. Keep up the fight. Jeff and his last name, Cynthia, and her last name in Indianapolis. Well, thanks to both of you. I appreciate the support. Yeah, I think we have four affiliates who stream online, and we are grateful for that, very grateful for that, because they don't have to. They don't have to stream online. We're in their market, but they do it anyway. In what may prove to be a particularly incendiary cable released by WikiLeaks, this one just floors me. You know, sometimes you think that only the Christian evangelicals in this country are the most hypocritical sons of bitches on the face of the earth, especially the leaders of that sick movement. Wrong! These cables describe a world of sex, drugs, and rock and roll behind the official pieties of Saudi Arabian royalty. Oh, my goodness! U.S. consulate officials in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, where the Jedi live, of course, described an underground Halloween party, for example, thrown last year by a member of the royal family, which broke all the country's Islamic taboos. Liquor and prostitutes were present in abundance, according to leaked dispatches behind the heavily guarded villa gates. The party was thrown by a wealthy prince. The diplomats said his identity should be kept secret. A U.S. energy company, a drinks company, also put up some of the finance for the party. Why? Jesus Christ, there's nobody on earth richer than these pigs. The cable said, quote, "Alcohol, though strictly prohibited by Saudi law and custom, was plentiful at the party's well-stocked bar. The hired Filipino bartenders served a cocktail punch using sadiki, a locally made moonshine. It was also learned through word of mouth that a number of the guests were, in fact, working girls, quote, quote, not uncommon for such parties." The dispatch from the U.S. partygoers, signed off by the consul in Jeddah, Martin Quinn, that's our boy, added, quote, "Though not witnessed directly at this event, cocaine and hashish use is common in these circles." This is in the Guardian of the UK. The underground party scene is, quote, "thriving and throbbing," end quote. That's according to the U.S. consulate. Thriving and throbbing in Saudi Arabia, thanks to the protection of Saudi royalty. But it's only behind, only available behind closed doors and for the very rich. More than 150 Saudi men and women, most in their 20s and 30s, were at this particular party. The patronage of royalty meant the feared religious police kept a distance. Admission was controlled through a strict guest list. Quote, the scene resembled a nightclub anywhere outside the kingdom. Plentiful alcohol, young couples dancing, a DJ at the turntables, and everyone in costume. End quote. Smirnoff Vodka was there? Oh, my goodness, in addition to the Siddiqui? The cable claimed it was easy for would-be partygoers to find a patron out of more than 10,000 princes in the kingdom. Some are royal highnesses with direct descent from King Abdul Aziz, while other are highnesses from less direct branches. This is the same Saudi royal family that encourages young people in South Asia and Central Asia to adopt the very strict confines, restrictions of Wahhabism, a branch of Islam that is not dissimilar to the Christian crazy people in this country, the evangelicals, the fundamentalists, and then to attend the Wahhabist schools sponsored by this drunken, orgiastic Saudi royal family, and then go kill people, go blow them up because they're not pure enough. These Wahhabists, these school graduates, they ought to go back to Jeddah, surround the royal palaces, and detonate their suicide bombs. Don't you think? Don't you think? I think!
Your mother always...
Kind of weird to me, but it's a function of age and change, is the fact that there, every single person on earth under the age of 30 did not live at the time of that John Lennon did. I don't know why that sticks in my head, but it does. John Lennon murdered 30 years ago tonight, as he walked into his apartment at the Dakota on the Upper West Side of New York. And as I said earlier, there's absolutely nothing of any substance that I can say about that, and I won't even try. I said earlier this evening, I had always hoped and looked forward to growing old with John Lennon writing songs. And what do I have? Mick Jagger. Ah. This hour is sponsored by EvolveFish.com. You see those unique, ubiquitous magnets on the back of people's cars, magnet or stick-ons or whatever. We've got I've got one on the pickup and one on the other vehicle that I won't mention because I don't want it firebombed. Nobody messes with the pickup here in Georgia. Anyway, this hour is sponsored by Evolfish.com, selling American-made weapons of mass information. Stickers, buttons, shirts, and other subversive gear. Evolvefish.com. If you like this program, go to that website. They're sponsoring this hour. And I understand they're going to be sponsoring more hours, right?
Yeah, you'll hear a lot from them over the next couple of weeks, and I just think there's something beautiful about buying atheist gear for your holiday shopping needs. It's just poetic.
I just love the one that has the fish, and inside it says gefilte.
Chips. Yeah. Or mine that says evolve and has feet and it's holding a little wrench.
Right. Evolvefish.com. Go there, please. They're sponsoring this hour. I mentioned the last time they sponsored an hour on this program that my first Evolvefish piece of gear I bought through The Nation, you know, the little marketplace in the back of the magazine. Check them out, Evolvefish.com. They sponsor this hour. I cannot pass up. I've got two stories about Beckworld. The first one I'll get to right now. The second one may have to wait till tomorrow. But according to Mother Jones, one of Beck's big gold advertisers, a federal judge, has frozen the assets. Beck's advertiser, the Superior Gold Group, at the request of prosecutors from L.A. County and Santa Monica City, not federal judge, request of prosecutors from L.A. County and Santa Monica City have filed a civil suit against the company, and a Los Angeles County judge has ordered that Superior Gold be placed into receivership and all of its assets, bank accounts, real estate, and presumably gold stored for customers, frozen. On Monday, a court-appointed lawyer actually physically seized control of the company, presumably to prevent further wrongdoing. The lawsuit alleged that, among other things, Superior Gold, one of Beck's big advertisers, had defrauded its customers by overcharging them, fraudulently inducing them to buy overpriced collector's coins rather than the bullion that they wanted, and taking customers' money for coins they never produced. The prosecutors hope that the lawsuit will provide restitution for all of the company's ripped-off customers. Why don't they go after Beck? That son of a bitch was nothing but a big shill for several of these gold companies, right? Putting a company into receivership is a pretty drastic and very rare move, Mother Jones says, for a judge in a civil case. It does not bode well for Beck's other and much bigger gold advertiser, Goldline, which has also been accused of very similar tactics, as Mother Jones documented earlier this year. The California prosecutors are also investigating Goldline. Both companies have claimed that they were targeted solely because of liberal outrage about Beck's political viewpoints. Ooh, you're trying to sound like Julian Assange, aren't you, huh? And they touted their outstanding ratings from the Better Business Bureau? Oh, my goodness. But the dramatic business seizure on Monday of Superior Gold suggests that the consumer complaints were not only legitimate, but that the situation may be worse than any of the critics suspected. Whether Goldline is in the same boat is hard to know, but the swift takeover of Superior Gold has to be making Goldline and Mr. Beck nervous. This rancid bastard, I swear to God. A rancid bastard. I'll have to do the other one some other time. I hate doing anything about the pig, but that story and this other one. Beck is a liar. He's a con artist. He's just like Sarah Palin. He's found a way to make millions, and that's the American way. He's scum. He's a swine. He's a deceiver. He's a false prophet for all the little piglets that follow him and just, oh, Glenn, oh, bless me, touch me. Ooh, can I touch you? No. Oh. I wonder how long it's going to be before Beck starts selling little pieces of prayer cloth or locks of his hair or maybe some kind of Beckified holy water. I bet it could make even millions more. People in this country are goddamn fools. P.T. Barnum had it right. There's a sucker born every minute. And there's someone born to take the sucker to the cleaners every hour. I added that last part. All right, I've got a missive here from Prairie, too. I'm going to try to get that in tonight, too. We are cramped. The private spaceship that went up today, carrying the Dragon capsule. The Dragon circled the world twice, then re-entered from a low orbit, parachuting the Pacific. NASA is hiring companies like SpaceX, that's the company that put this up, to haul supplies to the International Space Station following next year's shuttle retirement. Taxi trips for astronauts may come next. How'd you like to be the insurance company insuring these trips? Huh? Right? Anyway, what got my attention was the company, SpaceX, based in California, was created by Elon Musk. You got to love that name. Elon Musk, who is a co-founder of PayPal. And PayPal is one of the capitalist entities that was targeted today by the WikiLeaks supporters, the hacker army. And along with Visa, MasterCard, who else? There are a bunch of them. This is kind of like the firing at Fort Sumter, South Carolina, back in 1861. We'll be right back. Or maybe it's the invasion of Poland in 1939. One of the two.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by EvolveFish.com. I've got it on my truck. Get it the hell on yours, okay? Go to EvolveFish.com. They are selling American-made weapons of mass information. EvolveFish.com. Stickers, buttons, shirts, and other subversive gear. Do it for Uncle Mike. Back to the... just the events that occurred today for a moment, the hackers attack that against the companies that are acting like sons of bitches and trying, I mean, the attempt to rewrite history, immediate history, I mean history of 5 minutes ago, the history of last hour's Malloy Show program, the attempt to control and rewrite history is ongoing. The Ministry of Truth, the mini-true, that was their function, and the Ministry of Truth is global now. As Julian Assange is pointing out on the one hand, and Bob Alexander is pointing out on the other, this combination of deception and psychopathology is making everybody on Earth crazy when you stop to think about it, especially people in the so-called Western democracies. We are not democracies. We never have been. A lot of people say, well, we're democratic republics. No, we're not. We're none of that. We are on the cusp of serfdom. We are slaves, only we just don't know it yet. But the attack today, the shot across the bow by the hackers who are saying, you know, we ain't mad with nobody. But if you go after the one guy on earth who has the power to disseminate the truth, we are going to cripple your ass, your company. Don't do it. That seems fair to me. The guy that I mentioned earlier, Hausch, Greg Hausch, hacker activist, he has worked on previous campaigns with Anonymous, that's the hacker group, but disavows any illegal activity himself. He said it was the first time the group had enough firepower to bring down well-secured blue-chip companies like MasterCard. He said, quote, no tactics have changed this time. But there is so much support, and there are so many people doing it that sites like that are going to go down. You have to have a fairly good-sized army, nothing spectacular, but a goodly number of people around the planet who are willing to fight these sons of bitches via the Internet. The Anonymous group, which gained notoriety for their cyber attacks on targets as diverse as the Church of Scientology, yes! And the rock musician Gene Simmons, yes! Anonymous released two manifestos over the weekend vowing revenge on those who moved against WikiLeaks after that organization's release of all these documents. One of the manifestos said, we fight for the same reasons. We want transparency and we counter censorship. Yep. Assange was jailed in Britain yesterday, as you know, and denied bail in a London court hearing. On the courthouse steps, his lawyer, Mark Stevens, told reporters that support shown for Mr. Assange in WikiLeaks so far was, quote, the tip of the iceberg, end quote. In words that now seem prophetic, he added that the battle for WikiLeaks and its founder's future was, quote, going to go viral, end quote. Yes, it is. Mark Rotenberg, director of the nonprofit Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington, wrote in an email, these are not attacks by national states or criminals. They are launched by political protesters who are seeking to disrupt business activity, much like those who have engaged in boycotts and other forms of political protest have done in the past. So far, the protests appear peaceful, with the aim to be disruption, of activity rather than actual destruction of property, end quote. Twitter, which was threatened with attack for blocking discussions of WikiLeaks, issued a statement saying, we've not censored anything related to the government. We haven't. Really? Word of advice, word up. Don't. Don't. If you'll put a piece of human crap on WikiLeaks like Sarah Palin, don't mess with anybody, right? Connected to this hacker army, Assange or WikiLeaks. Because what Julian Assange and WikiLeaks are doing is the only thing. Nothing else is going to work except this kind of resistance. This is what I think most people who have sense, progressives, and I don't care what political party they claim, in what country they claim, but progressives, people who do not want to see the planet destroyed, who are anti-war, who are pro-truth, pro-justice, this is what has been lacking. A weapon that is so effective. Demonstrations, sit-ins, maybe for the shock effect, but real action, the internet. We'll be right back.
loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
And this hour is sponsored by EvolveFish.com, EvolveFish.com. We have on our vehicles, if you don't have them on yours, you are you're missing a lot of fun. I love, especially here in the South, I love the looks on people's faces when they come up behind me and on my pickup truck, and I have one on the left rear of the pickup truck. So when people pass me, you know, they either will or will not see it. But the ones that do see it, they look at me like, you son of a bitch. Go to their website, EvolveFish.com, selling American-made weapons of mass information. Not just stickers. Go there. There's a lot of stuff there, okay? All right, will you do that? Thanks to EvolveFish for sponsoring this hour. I appreciate it. All right, from Prairie 2, from Bruce Edberg. Meet the new oligarchs, same as the old oligarch. Prairie 2 writes, I had thought only Republicans were capable of making truly cynical speeches devoid of any real truth. President Obama has proven me wrong. In his speech, he said, quote, because you don't negotiate with hostage takers, except when there's a risk the hostage gets harmed, key thing is that this is a temporary compromise, unquote. By that definition, you would always negotiate with hostage takers and give them exactly what they want, since hostage takers always have hostages that will be harmed. And since when is 2 years temporary? Especially considering that the next president will be a corporate Republican, or worse. Obama's claim that he must help the unemployed is a hollow claim, because despite the Republican talk of the unemployed receiving 3 years of benefits, there's nothing in the proposal to help the 99ers. With over 2 million out of benefits and the number growing rapidly, Obama's concern is little better than crocodile tears for the people in the most need. Corporations now put it right in their ads that only those with jobs or recently laid off need apply. The talking point there is their skills are stale. And there are 3 million unfilled jobs for lack of these skills. I'll bet you a bowl of curry. But they know exactly where to get workers with those skills, and they'll work for a third the pay. They come with the added benefit of being indentured to the company that gets them a visa. No shopping around for a better job, no complaining about working conditions, or it's back to Mumbai on the next plane. Now Obama is threatening the Democrats in Congress that the economy will collapse if they don't give the hostage takers what they want. Obama is not stalling while the SWAT team comes, but rather he truly has Stockholm Syndrome. Picture Obama as a newspaper heiress in a wig, wearing a miniskirt, while brandishing a machine gun in a bank. Me thinks Prairie 2 may have picked something that a lot of our audience doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. Patty Hearst and the Symbionese Liberation Army. Oh, God, those were the good old days, right, Kathy? Anyway, back to Prairie 2. Obama said today that the economists have crunched the numbers and paint a rosy picture if we give in to the rich holding a gun at the heads of the poor. These are the same economists who are always wrong when any new numbers come out. He has proposed no fundamental reforms. Rather, he is plowing ahead with more so-called free trade. Like freedom and lunch, trade isn't free. The founding fathers understood this. They fought a bloody war and literally risked all to free us from free trade. How many teabaggers know that? With Obama's new friends in Congress, he will add trillions to the debt and provide no significant stimulus for the economy that continues to spiral toward a corporate oligarchy befitting a banana republic. It's possible Obama has simply given up on reform and is playing the political game, or maybe he's given up altogether. The Republicans will continue to spin the failure of the economy as Obama's fault, since they agreed to, quote, his plan, end quote. The founders warned us about all the things that corporations do that they fought against. But history? That was a long time ago. Obama's knowledge of that era seems limited to the fact that he could not have entered the White House through the front door, as he said in his speech. Sadly, he will give the keys back to that same corporate tyranny as he leaves. PrairieNumeral2.com, a.k.a. Bruce Enberg. Go to his website. What else we got? Brad Friedman has an excellent article at bradfriedman.com. All out cyber war over WikiLeaks. The message currently posted, Brad writes, by the hacker group calling themselves Anonymous as part of what they call Operation Payback. The message is, quote, "We will fire at anyone or anything that tries to censor WikiLeaks, including multi-billion dollar companies such as PayPal. The major blank storm has begun," end quote. According to Raw Story, Anonymous issued a statement which read, quote, "While we don't have much of an affiliation with WikiLeaks, we fight for the same reasons. We want transparency, and we counter censorship. The attempts to silence WikiLeaks are long strides closer to a world where we cannot say what we think and are unable to express our opinions and ideas. We cannot let this happen. This is why our intention is to find out who is responsible for this failed attempt at censorship. This is why we intend to utilize our resources to raise awareness, attack those against, and support those who are helping lead our world to freedom and democracy." Ba-dop. Brad goes on, and Brad Friedman is the famous Brad Friedman who substitutes for this program on a regular basis. BradFriedman.com. He writes what appears to be the first real and serious, at least the first known real and serious, all-out cyber war, as Secure Computing Magazine is now calling it, seems to be underway. In this case, however, it wasn't the hackers or even a foreign government who appeared to have fired the first shots, but the U.S. government, who did so via apparently successful tactics used to intimidate both Amazon and PayPal into cutting off service to WikiLeaks. The company that has been charged with breaking absolutely no U.S. laws. No charges have been filed against WikiLeaks anywhere on Earth. Brad writes, "The entire episode reveals a number of very serious concerns, and at least one that may not be quite as obvious. Last week, we learned that Senator Joe Lieberman's office, in his capacity as chairman of the Senate Homeland Security Committee, intimidated Amazon into dropping their services to WikiLeaks with little more than a phone call. Other smaller internet sites were asked to and did follow suit. Today, we learned that PayPal Vice President Osama Bedier, B-E-D-I-E-R, confirmed his company shut off WikiLeaks' account due to pressure from the U.S. State Department. Telling an audience at a web conference this morning, according to the Christian Science Monitor, quote, "State Department told us these were illegal activities. It was straightforward. We first comply with regulations around the world, making sure that we protect our brand." Well, there you go. Well, there you go. As Brad writes, but in fact, whatever those illegal activities are, they have yet to be spelled out to anyone, as no criminal charges have been brought by the United States against either WikiLeaks or its founder, Julian Assange. In short, it was simply out-and-out McCarthy-esque-style intimidation by the U.S. government against supposedly private companies, which led them to comply with the government's political agenda. Hollywood blacklist anyone? I wonder how many of my listeners know what that is, what the Hollywood blacklist was. You can Google it, Hollywood blacklist. This, of course, should outrage not only all members of the media and the entirety of the progressive blogosphere, but even all of those who claim to support the U.S. Constitution, including the far right, from Rupert Murdoch's anti-American terrorist organization to Glenn Beck to Sean Hannity to the Tea Party. Incredibly, very few among any of those groups have spoken up against what is clearly an extra-legal, extra-constitutional assault on both the media organization and the private companies with whom they worked. Glenn's got a, not Glenn, he had Glenn Greenwald on interview on KPFK on Monday, which you can listen to if you go to bradfriedman.com. There's more. Brad is an excellent writer. He's also an excellent gatherer in of facts. Bradfriedman.com. We'll be right back. Ago tonight, the murder of John Lennon, as you know. Jesus, time rips by when you're having fun, right? This hour has been sponsored by EvolveFish.com, selling American-made weapons of mass information, stickers, buttons, t-shirts, and other, or shirts and other subversive gear. And we thank them. Go to EvolveFish.com. Please do that for Uncle Mike, okay? Thanks to all of our sponsors tonight. We have a sponsor coming up next hour, Danielle. Wait till you hear what she said in her message.
Ow!
From Bruce in California, your comments about people under 30 not having been alive while John Lennon lived are obviously true, but I'd like to recount a recent incident. I've been writing a database for an insurance company, and my work keeps me focused on the monitor in front of me. Even so, I do have very general conversations with others sitting nearby. One young man, about 20, asked me what kind of music I liked. I proceeded to mention several classic bands and then added the Beatles without looking up. He said he thought they were great. And a girl about 18 sitting behind me, who apparently heard me, called out for my attention. When I turned, she proudly displayed her T-shirt. It had the Beatles across the front. It doesn't bring John Lennon back, but it does show their cross-generational immortality. Bruce in California. Yeah, there's nobody alive today who lived during the days of Wolfgang Mozart either, but there's some cross-generational immortality. It was just the thing about Lennon was that you knew that he was us and we were him. I am you and you are me. We knew that. We knew that he was us and we were him. And it was just such a jolt. I promise not to bring this up, and I'm trying real hard not to. We have a park here in Atlanta, Piedmont Park, which was designed by Olmsted. What's his first name? Same guy that designed Central Park in New York. Was it John Olmsted? No, I don't either. And it's a gorgeous green space right in the heart of Midtown Atlanta. And 30 years ago tonight, I had been someplace with somebody. I don't remember exactly who it was. I think one of my guy friends. Probably out drinking beer. And we came home, and one of the people that lived in our house, there were about seven of us that lived in this house, shared all the expenses. And one of the guys that lived there was a musician, and his wife was a dancer. And as soon as we walked in the door, Michael and Sue came up to us and said, "Have you heard?" And, of course, we said, "Heard what?" You know, and we were in a bar. And they told us what had happened. And it was just like an electric shock. And I never thought, while he was alive, that John Lennon was that important to me. But I know that he was, because I remember such detail about that night 30 years ago. Just as I remember where I was and what I was doing when Kennedy... excuse me, John Kennedy was assassinated. So what to do? We all stood around in the house. We turned on television. Television was much different 30 years ago. We turned on NBC, and other than a bulletin that came from NBC News, it went back to the pre-recorded Johnny Carson show. There was no CNN. There was no MSNBC. There were no cable news channels, or very few cable channels to speak of anyway. What to do? How to connect? So, somebody said, "Let's go to Piedmont Park." I have no reason. We had no reason to go to Piedmont Park. I have no idea why someone suggested that. But five or six of us jumped in the car and off we went. It was about a 10-minute drive, and we got there, and we had to park about seven or eight blocks away because the traffic. First of all, it's a residential neighborhood, but the traffic must have been horrendous. There are no parking places along the street. So we finally found a spot, got out of the car, and walked to one of the bigger areas, kind of like the meadow at Piedmont Park, or at in Central Park in New York. And it was dark, obviously, because we didn't get the news about this until about 10 o'clock at night, 10:30 at night. And, I think it was about 11 o'clock at night. And we started walking into the park, and we noticed off in this little valley that is the meadow, or I'm sorry, that is Piedmont Park, that section that reminds me of the meadow, there was this huge mass of darker darkness, and it was people. And somebodies had built a bonfire, and people were singing that song, "All We Are Saying Is Give Peace a Chance." And it was very haunting and very moving. There were all kinds of people in the park that night, and people started holding candles. Where did the candles come from? Who knows? And cigarette lighters. And as I looked, I was the editor of a weekly newspaper, alternative newspaper here in Atlanta at the time. And as I looked at the faces, you know, and saw young people, not so young people, white folks, black folks, folks of all different colors, and stood there and listened to the music and swayed with this mass of Atlantans, I felt like a kind of connection that... I haven't felt since, to tell you the truth. I'll see you right after the break. Stick around, all right? I'm Mike Malloy. We'll be right back. It is 7 past the hour, and this hour is sponsored by Danielle, who writes, on this holy day of obligation, I wish to honor the Blessed Virgin Mary, that gutsy Palestinian chick who pulled off the bacon-saving scam of all time, the Immaculate Conception. I wonder if Danielle is a lapsed Catholic. Danielle is sponsoring this hour. And again, she writes, on this holy day of obligation. Is that a Catholic noted day or a Christian noted day? I've never heard of a holy day of obligation. Oh, well. Danielle writes, on this holy day of obligation, I wish to honor the Blessed Virgin Mary, that gutsy Palestinian chick who pulled off the bacon-saving scam of all time, the Immaculate Conception. Indeed. Thank you, Danielle, for sponsoring the hour. You probably heard about this, but there is talk now of finding a challenger to Barack Obama in the primaries that began in, well, when? 2012. His compromise with the Republicans, if that's what you want to call it. I call it a total collapse. And by the way, I have an email here I'm going to share with you a little bit. Somebody who totally disagrees with my position on Obama, where it concerns what he did in agreeing. And by the way, it's not a done deal. This has to be approved by the House and the Senate. Good luck with that. We're hearing all kinds of reports that Democrats are going to filibuster and stop it and not sign on. And they still need 60 votes in the Senate. Don't forget that. We'll see what happens. Anyway, progressive critics see this extension of tax cuts for the ultra-wealthy people like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and the rest of these swine, Bill O'Reilly, Neil Bortz. These are the people in that particular category, people who are attempting any way they can to destroy the country except where it concerns their money. They are the ones who've been pushing this the hardest. They're the ones who will most benefit. But progressives, people who have a brain and know how to use it, have made it very clear in the past 48 hours, they see this as a profound betrayal, what Obama has done, and is going to cause an increase in the debate that's starting to surface. And that debate, it's coming up on liberal blogs and email lists in recent weeks. As Matt Bai reports in the New York Times, it is the argument whether or not the president who embodied hope and change in 2008 should face a primary challenge in 2012. And apparently the idea doesn't have a whole lot of momentum right now. Because, as we talked about the other night, there's no obvious candidate. Somebody called the program and said, well, who would you support? I don't know at this point. I have no idea. I really don't. Most likely, it would not be a Democrat. Most likely, it would be a Democratic socialist or an independent. Someone whose record clearly indicated that he or she was not tied to capitalist/corporate America, the warmongers, the people who have established the national security state, the influences in capitalism and government that are determined to turn us into a nation of serfs. That person would not, I don't care what his or her party affiliation would be, middle finger, middle finger, middle finger, go away, get out of my life, get out of my face, leave my country, a pox on you, may you rot in hell. You know, who does that leave for someone like me? I have no idea. Bernie Sanders? What's this talk about Sarah Palin and Donald Trump? Jesus H. Christ. Yeah, that would probably be a winner in this country. It really would, you know. Donald Trump and Sarah Palin. Oh, my God. Anyway, the fact that a primary is challenged is being openly discussed, as Matt Bai points out, reflects how fully Mr. Obama's relationship with his party's liberal activists has ruptured, and the considerable confusion over here on the left over what to do about it. Three liberal writers last weekend made the case for taking on Obama in 2012. Michael Lerner, longtime editor of Tikkun magazine, argued in the Washington Post that a primary represented, quote, a real way to save the Obama presidency, end quote, by forcing Mr. Obama to move leftward. Robert Kuttner, co-founder of the American Prospect, and one of the Democratic Party's most popular populist voices, issued a similar call on the Huffington Post, suggesting Iowa as the ideal incubator to get something started. And on the same site, Clarence Jones, a longtime or one-time confidant of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., suggested that liberals should break with Obama now, just as Dr. King and others did with Lyndon Johnson in 1968. Don't forget, Lyndon Johnson, that famous photograph of Lyndon Johnson signing the Voting Rights Act, was it 1964, 1965? I'm sorry, I don't have the exact title of the act, but the famous photograph of Lyndon Johnson signing the act with black human rights leaders standing around him, including Dr. King. But in 1968... Dr. King, after declaring his total opposition to the war in Vietnam and the war on the poor and the middle class in this country by Democrats and Republicans and capitalists and the power structure, he broke with Lyndon Johnson. Jones, who is African-American, wrote, quote, it is not easy to consider challenging the first African-American to be elected president of the United States, but regrettably, I believe the time has come to do this, end quote. I wish he wouldn't have made reference to Obama's race. I understand why. This is the United States of America. Nothing happens without racial consideration, one way or the other, either in terms of fury or in terms of praise. There's no halfway ground where it concerns race in this country. A lot of white people say, well, I don't even know he's a black man. I think I've said before that I have tend to forget Obama's color, which is nonsense. This is the United States of America. You don't look at a person of color and say, oh, I just see a regular person. Because a regular person in this society is someone who is white. Anything else is deviation. That's the standard, white people. So for any white, liberal, conservative, I don't care what they are, myself included, to say, well, I don't see his race. I just see a leader. Hog's not. Now, how it affects you when you look at somebody of color, that determines whether or not you are being reactive or proactive or are just an old unreconstructed racist who thinks the Negroes should all stay home and get their jobs back from the Mexicans. You know what I'm saying? Of course you do. So, anyway, in Iowa, a group known as the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, which was originally founded to aid Democratic congressional candidates in 2010, has started broadcasting an advertisement that shows Mr. Obama in 2008 promising to reverse the tax cuts for the most affluent Americans. This group isn't advocating a primary challenge just yet, but the choice of Iowa as a market to start this advertising campaign seems to be intended to send a pretty clear warning to the Obama camp. We'll be right back.
Turn on the TV. There's hope. Somebody's acting crazy. There's hope. You said it'll drive you crazy. There's hope. But I'm taking back my power today. There's hope. Gas prices, they just keep on rising. There's hope. The government, they keep on lying. We gotta keep on surviving. Keep living our truth and do the best we can do. Cause there's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile.
soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It is indeed 21 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Danielle. Danielle, she of the one name, Danielle, who writes, "On this holy day of obligation, I wish to honor the Blessed Virgin Mary, that gutsy Palestinian chick who pulled off the bacon-saving scam of all time, the Immaculate Conception." Thank you, Danielle. I love it. A primary challenge from the left for Barack Obama in 2012. A lot of people are talking about it. Matt Baez writing about it in today's New York Times. He quotes Adam Green, the Progressive Change Campaign Committee's co-founder. That's the organization that is talking about the idea of challenging Obama. Adam Green, co-founder of that group, says, quote, "On issue after issue, when the public is on his side, this president just refuses to fight. At this point, the strategy is to shame him into fighting," end quote. Now, you know, how far we have fallen, right? From 2008, we being the Democrats, I'm not talking about Democratic politicians. I'm talking about people who still believe that such a thing as a Democratic Party exists, although those of us who believe, or past tense believed, that are being shown daily what fools we are. There is no Democratic Party. There hasn't been for a long time. Sadly, but truthfully, that's just the way it is. There are Republicans, and there are lesser Republicans. And then you have the fringes, the nutballs, the crazy people. You know, teabaggers, John Birchers, Glenn Beck, the rest of these freaks. But this would have seemed unthinkable in 2008 for Democrats. I mean, the idea that Barack Obama, being the a symbol of reborn liberalism, that it would turn out like this 2 years later. I mean, my God. From being this great black hope. See, that's what I mean about the race thing. From the idea of being this great black hope, this leader, kind of I don't know. I can't think of a comparison to any American historical figure. Barack Obama, he's unique. He really is. He certainly got me with his rhetoric. Like I said to Blue last night, his rhetoric got me. Not his voting record. I knew what his voting record was, and we talked about it, and I pointed it out. You know, oh, my God, you know, I did, and some people on the left did, the worst thing you could have done during the run-up to the election in 2008, and that was to point out the pro-corporatist voting records of both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. But there it was. Nobody wanted to hear that. Oh, no, 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 no. And, of course, the prostituted, whored, punk-ass media in this country had decided that it was either going to be Hillary or Obama, and then they were fascinated with both. First woman president. Oh, my God. First black president. Oh, my God. Blah, blah, blah. The support that Obama got from what was left of the left, the moderate, not even the left, but the, you know, the Democrats, the liberals, the left-center or center-left voting bloc in this country, which apparently numbers in the millions, not too much anymore, I wouldn't think. But the support that he got in 2008, that was before Obama abandoned the idea of card check legislation for unions. Remember that? To make it easier for unions to get into the workplace and organize workers, which has been the only check and balance against capitalism. The only one. Government is no longer a check and balance against predatory capitalism. Come on, give me a break. Jesus, just take a look at the regulatory agencies and what's happened to them. The only balance were organized workers. Workers of the world, unite! You remember that, right? Oh, scary, scary. Woo, woo, woo! That's communism! Really? You poor bastard if you think that. I really feel sorry for you. But anyway, he abandoned that legislation for unions. He abandoned the so-called public option in health care. He escalated the war in Afghanistan. He formed this horrific group of trolls called the Deficit Reduction Commission, the one led by the mountain troll, Alan Simpson. Is that guy scary or what? He looks like something right out of Lord of the Rings, doesn't he? This was before Obama made it clear that there would be no pursuit or prosecution of the Bush crime family. Before Obama made it clear that spying on Americans would continue. Before Obama signed an executive order allowing summary executions of American citizens anywhere on earth. If some punk ass in the CIA or the State Department decided that person was a threat to U.S. security. You remember that, Obama, don't you?
Saying, boys, we have to tighten up our belts. But he didn't look any thinner than he did a year ago. And I wonder just how hungry that man felt. He knows it ain't hard to get along with somebody else's troubles. They don't make him lose any.
Time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. What we're talking about here is a primary challenge from the liberal side of the Democratic Party come the 2012 campaign season. And as Matt Bynum, the New York Times today, points out, Obama's only the latest in a long line of Democratic presidents, going all the way back to Roosevelt, who disappointed the liberal wing of the party. In 1960, when Kennedy was elected, he represented for liberals something similar to what Obama represents today. And 2 years later, the writer Norman Mailer concluded that Kennedy stood for nothing but the pursuit of power, quote, without light or principle, end quote. And, of course, you know the history of Lyndon Johnson, Jimmy Carter. They both faced liberal primary challenges when they stood for re-election. Johnson because of the Vietnam War, Carter because he was deemed to be ineffectual in advancing liberal ideas. Ba-ba-ba-ba! Bill Clinton, he infuriated the left on free trade, NAFTA, welfare reform, but he managed to avoid a primary challenge. So the talk is there about what some liberal bloggers, a couple of liberal talk show hosts, I don't know anyone other than me, I'm sure there's a couple who are talking about it, and I'm still getting, you know, the attempts at verbal ass-kicking from people who listen to the program and think I'm out of my mind. You got to support Obama! No, I don't. No, I don't at all. And I'm going to share with you a letter I got. This is from Daniel in Seaside, California. I always am suspicious of people who begin the way Daniel begins his email, but what the hell. This is what he writes. I came across your show Tuesday night. Okay. I don't know if it was live or a rebroadcast. I want to start by saying I'm about as left-wing as they come, and I think your analysis of Obama and this latest deal with the Republicans is way off base. I think you are not basing your analysis on political reality. Just because the country is not where you would like it to be politically, and just because we have a Republican Party that I believe is about as extreme and despicable as the Nazis were, doesn't mean you should blame Obama for not making the country move forward in as progressive a way as you would like. You called him a coward when what he's being is pragmatic, compassionate for the middle class, and politically savvy. The Republicans might be crazy, but they now will have control of the House, and if we had not gotten the agreement we did, it would have been much harder and nearly impossible to get anything later. Let's look at what we gave up and what we got. We allowed the wealthiest 2%, some 360,000 people, to get away with keeping the Bush tax break. I know we need the revenues, and the Republicans are total a-holes for making that their signature issue, but they were holding middle-class America hostage by not extending unemployment insurance. And Obama felt like he had to pay the ransom. Ooh, this man listens to the speeches. The good news is that the tax breaks for the rich are not permanent. Something we might not be able to say if Obama had held off on making a deal till after the Republicans take over the House. There's so much in this guy's email that is just so jive turkey nonsense. By the time the Republicans took over the House, the first of the year, the Bush tax cuts would have expired. And it would have been up to the Republicans to do it again, to pass legislation giving tax breaks to the wealthy. But this person who wrote me this email, and it goes on and on here, is you know, a pretty typical American. He doesn't have a clue as to what's really going on. But I digress. Let me go on, because, you know, a lot of people say, well, Mike, don't bust his ass. He just wrote to you and expressing what he really thinks. Okay. He says, they, the wealthy, also got what they wanted regarding what they so cynically call the death tax. Big deal. And by the way, that's only temporary as well. Oh, my God. What did we get? Extension of unemployment, which was by far the most important thing that Obama got for middle-class Americans. I mean, this was an emergency. A couple million would have been without a paycheck before Christmas. And a few people more within the next few months. As screwed as the Republicans are on this whole thing, Obama showed he's on the side of average people who are unlucky enough right now to be out of work. And the Republicans showed whose side they're on, the wealthy few. They don't give a damn about the middle class. This is all on the record. What else do we get? A decrease in the payroll tax for workers. Now, obviously, my emailer here does not understand what that means. It means a defunding. A further defunding of Social Security. It means putting Social Security out there now where it can be tampered with. Up to this point, Social Security Trust Fund really is in a lockbox. Yes, indeed, the U.S. government has borrowed against that and has to pay it back. But this guy, again, he's a typical American and doesn't quite understand what the hell he's talking about. There were a few other things in the compromise that were in favor of the middle class, but I don't remember right now. But my main point is this. You were making these extreme statements about Obama, calling him a coward and saying there's no way you can vote for him. And what really bothers me is that a lot of people probably listened to you and probably influenced a lot of people. I seriously doubt that. In this case, erroneously, in my opinion, this hurts the liberal cause, and anything that hurts the liberal cause helps the Republicans, and that is a horrible thing for this country. No matter how upset you are that you're not getting everything you want on your liberal wish list, we, as liberals, must exercise the same solidarity conservatives have been able to muster in the past three decades, because if we don't, these horrible jackasses are going to have the power, and they'll continue to run this country into the ground. Extreme solidarity is how the conservatives have been able to win so many elections over the past three decades. They've been able to make a very strong, albeit erroneous, case to the American people that liberals are bad for this country and they are good. The Republican Party is rotten to the core, and we under no circumstances can allow them to get their power back. When did they ever lose it? The liberals who stayed home for the midterm elections made a huge mistake. Something like 20 million who voted for Obama in 2008 didn't vote in 2010. We, as liberals, needed to have the president's back, and instead we turned our back on him, making his job that much harder. This is a big reason why he had to make the compromise he made, because he knew if he waited till after the Republicans took over the House, we'd get nothing. Oh, my God. Okay, whatever. He goes on. My question to you is this. What's the alternative? If 2012 comes along and Obama is a Democratic candidate, which he most likely will be, are you going to not vote or vote for a third party and let the Republicans win the White House, which would probably spread to Congress as well? You might be disillusioned with Obama, but having a Republican in the White House would be 100 times worse. Stop and think of the direction Obama has tried to move the country. And the legislation he has been able to pass compared to what would have happened with a Republican president. I believe unemployment would be twice as high, and we'd be in a full-fledged 1930s-style depression. This guy, I believe, apparently, unlike you, is a true ally of the middle class. A middle class that's half asleep and doesn't know an ally when it sees one and often continues to act against its own self-interest. Daniel goes on. He happens to understand the politics of the times very well, is pragmatic, and knows how to evaluate the probability of winning or losing on every issue and how worthwhile it is to spend political capital on each issue. Remember, politics is not done in a vacuum. He knows how crazy the Republicans are and how stupid and easily manipulated many of the American people are. And if the Democrats tried to give the nomination to a different candidate that's as liberal and astute as Obama, who would that who would that be? Do you really think Dennis Kucinich, Alan Grayson, Bernie Sanders, or Ralph Nader could be elected? If you think there are enough people right now who are liberal enough to elect any of those guys, then you're really delusional. I know we'd like to have this liberal dream world. But all this going off half-cocked and continuing the cannibalistic backbiting to try to get it would be a big mistake. We need patience. Things need to be done incrementally. And the liberal movement, winning one battle at a time, chipping away at this pathological neoconservative anti-liberal mindset that has prevailed for too long, just as the conservatives did during the past three decades of Reaganism. There's a balance that needs to be struck. The president needs to fight for liberal principles, being careful not to try to get too much too quick and end up with nothing.
What?
Liberals need to staunchly and unwaveringly support their president and their party as the Republicans have done in recent decades. Undivided support for our president would give him all the political cover he will need to continue pursuing a liberal agenda with ever-increasing intensity and thereby create a new and viable liberal movement that can prevail for decades to come. Obviously, my letter writer doesn't understand that about 70% of the American public, liberals, conservatives, teabaggers, Republicans, Democrats, supported the idea of not continuing these incredibly wasted tax breaks for the filthy rich. But my letter writer here, my email correspondent, doesn't have a clue as to what's really going on. He's fairly articulate. I've only found a couple of misspelled words, which is incidental to his email. But it's astonishing to me how someone can put together what they think are coherent points of view. And all this guy is doing, and there's a couple more paragraphs to share with you when we come back. All he's doing is slowly sawing back and forth with a rather dull knife his own throat. Sponsored by Danielle. She of one name, Danielle, who writes in with her sponsorship, quote, "On this holy day of obligation, I wish to honor the Blessed Virgin Mary, that gutsy Palestinian chick who pulled off the bacon-saving scam of all time, the Immaculate Conception." I love it. Thank you, Danielle. Lengthy email from Daniel, not Danielle, but Daniel in California, in Seaside, California, who is really got his underwear in a wad about my refusal to see Barack Obama as anything other than what he is, a dedicated corporatist, a center-right leader who is simply not a liberal. I think Daniel suffers from the same delusion that a lot of white Americans suffer from, and that is if it's a person of color, they must be liberal. Daniel has probably had very little contact with the African-American community in this country. If he had had contact, had black friends, had people in that community, he would understand that some of the most conservative people in the United States are so-called African-Americans. But Daniel is content in his point of view, and I'm sharing it with you. And trying to limit my nasty-ass critiques of what he says as I go along here. It's difficult, though. Anyway, he goes on to say, if we give up on the best guy we've got right now for the liberal cause, that would be Obama, given the whole political landscape of this country right now, we're going to blow a great opportunity to cause the political winds to shift in a liberal direction. See, it's when I get sentences like that from Daniel that I wonder, where are you living? Are you out of your mind? Liberal winds blowing? Or political winds in a liberal direction? How long have you been on or off whatever it is you're taking, Daniel? What liberal winds are you talking about? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm yelling at an email. Whoops. And then Daniel puts the coup de grace on this whole email. He writes, listen to Randy Rhoads' show from today. That was yesterday. Or talk to her. She strongly agrees with the president's political moves and has some very strong arguments to explain her position. I'm sure. Remember, first and foremost, it's more about doing what's best for the American people than extreme political purity, being able to claim 100% victory in every political battle. Please do not be a negative force for the liberal cause. Let it gain steam and continue to be critical, the liberal cause, and work to bring it closer to your vision. But don't let your frustration for not getting all that you want all the time create a political vacuum that will allow the Republicans to continue their well-established political dominance. That would be horrible.
It's all your fault.
Apparently it's all my fault, right? So it's signed Daniel and his last name in Seaside, California, and his phone number. Daniel, that was... thank you for writing, Daniel. I do appreciate it. I think you're... wrong on just about everything that you put in the email. And frankly, the day that I listen to or chat with Randy Rhoads for political advice will be the day they open a Dipper Dan franchise in the hottest part of hell, where it concerns this particular issue especially. But to me, what Daniel's letter represents, and if you listen to the whole thing here, you may agree completely with what Daniel's saying. And essentially, to boil it down, he's saying, Malloy, stop your goddamn criticism of a true liberal who is now in the White House. Because, Malloy, you're assisting in the murder of the liberal principles that, To me, anyone who would write or insist or pretend that Barack Obama is a liberal is so severely delusional that I would question anything they said beyond that point. But because Daniel wrote a fairly articulate email and a lengthy one and really obviously put his heart and soul into it, unless this is a joke, this could always be parody. It could be somebody who sat down and said, I think I'll get Malloy to read on the air a very long email, and I'm just going to really jerk him around here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If that's the case, Daniel, high five. Way to go. But if you really mean what you put in this email, I don't know what to say to you except you apparently have a 180-degree different take on Barack Obama than most of us who really are on the liberal left. I know a lot of people who consider themselves to be liberals are so hungry and so thirsty for anything that even remotely smells like liberalism that given the right rhetorical approach, regardless of what his voting record is when he was a member of the legislative branch, regardless of what his presidential directives have been, regardless of where he stands on the issues, I'm referring to Obama, people who are desperate for the smell of liberalism, a little taste of liberalism, will support anyone who makes the right kinds of noises, emits the right kind of aroma. You know, oh, well, they must be a liberal. They must be a liberal, you know, when they are not a liberal. Not at all. I don't know why it is so hard for someone like Daniel to understand that Barack Obama is a right-of-center centrist. That's exactly what he is. But Daniel is going to maintain his delusions for as long as they sustain him, I guess. Do we have any going home music? Ah, there's some. I'll see you tomorrow night, Peace Seekers. Take care.